I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Tell us a bit more about what I was going to ask about freight, what the other big mistakes that people make, but let's come back to freight as kind of interacts with you first. So assuming somebody's not using a freight forwarder, and let's assume like for most people, they're going to use their Chinese supplier. As long as you check out, if you get a DHL account, for example, as I did, because my suppliers mostly seem to use DHL, and check that their air courier rates, which is using DHL, UPS, FedEx, seem like they're kosher, you know, they're reasonable and better than I could get anyway. So assuming that a lot of people are going to use the couriers. Now, let's assume that I'm sending something, let's say I'm UK based, but I don't want my flat filled with stuff, which I don't anymore. I've got allergic to that now. And I get it sent to you. What sort of steps do I need to put in place? You've already mentioned that it needs to be in my company's name, but at your address. Very important point. Yeah. What other major freights or paperwork? Let's look at paperwork first. What other major freight paperwork errors do people make, and how do we overcome those?
Luckily, if you're using a courier, they do all that for you. In fact, if you're using one of the freight professionals, you don't have to worry about the various paperwork, customs clearance, etc., because that's what you're paying them for. You know, it's a skill, it's knowledge that these guys have built up over time, and let them do it. If you know, I think UPS. I think they charge £11 per shipment for customs clearance. I think a similar charge for DHL and those sort of places. Because you're importing the product, most of the paperwork is done by the exporter. You're going to end up with the VAT and the duty. Both those figures are calculated off the commercial invoice volume. Now, another thing that the Chinese want to do, and I don't think it's anything malicious, or they're trying to help you out, is they send things in as samples. When if they are a sample, that's fine. But if you're getting 500 of one, even 100 of one item, well, they're not really a sample. And at some point, the guys at HMRC, at Customs, they're going to suss this out, and you may end up with a surprise bill or even penalties on every other subsequent import that you do will no doubt be inspected, causing delays. So ask them to declare the correct value. You know, it's a proper business we're doing. It's not a side gig that we're just going to... So if you get them to declare the proper commercial invoice volume, yes, it will cost you more in import duty and VAT, but it's the right thing to do. You know, you want to build a business on solid foundations, not on sand.
So what about the common thing that the Chinese will do? Yeah, I've had them offer to send things as samples before, and I was like, what are you saying? It's 500 units. How many samples do I need? But the other thing they did offer, which is pretty common, and let's hope nobody from the tax office is watching, but is listening, if it's the audio version, that they'll say things like, well, look, it's going to be $2,500 invoice value, which if you're importing to the USA is a kind of magic number beyond which it all gets more complicated. But they'll often say things like, should we put the invoice value down to $2,000 or whatever it is? Is it advisable to play with the figures that way? Or do you think that's dodgy ground as well? Or can we get away with that, to put it frankly?
No, I think it's dodgy ground. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, you're evading taxes, which I believe in the UK is a criminal offence. And again, if you're that unlucky person to get your product inspected, and the guy's got a quiet day and he does a bit of digging and finds out that your products are probably worth twice or three times more than what you've declared, then you are going to start having problems. And then they will put you on a watch list, I'm sure. Ongoing shipments will be inspected and make sure the paperwork's correct, and whatever else delays that these guys can put in the way, I'm sure will happen. So no, I don't think it is. I don't think it is right. I think it's a business, and you know, you should conduct your business in the correct way.
Right, that's pretty clear advice. Thank you. That's useful to know. And it's good to think about the consequences of these things, because a lot of the time, I think people work on the I hope it doesn't happen model, which again is not a very sustainable model of business, right? But so tell me a bit more about customs clearance. Let's tell me about commercial invoice as well, because that seemed to be something that a couple of the suppliers I work with who weren't moderately familiar with exporting, but not maybe expert, seem to really struggle with. Is that something that you as the buyer need to worry about? Do you need to instruct your Chinese suppliers about commercial invoices? Or will that automatically be checked by DHL or UPS or FedEx? Assuming for now that you're doing the simple thing and using your supplier's courier, you know, if you're first starting out, it's probably advisable.
The commercial invoice is just the same as any other invoice. You know, if you're buying goods in the UK, you go to... I don't know, you go and buy a car part and they give you an invoice. It's an invoice, just the invoice, the value of the goods you've purchased. It'll detail the what goods you've purchased. It'll detail obviously the delivery address. It'll deliver the your address, your importer on record address, the consignee. It'll also detail what's called the commodity code, which is a global code. It codes what the product is. So it tells, there's a whole, if you look on the HMRC website for commodity codes or the HSE code, it basically tells you what the product is. So when it arrives in the UK, the customs can charge the correct import duty for your product. So
okay, and is that, like that. Are those things that a Chinese supplier is automatically going to put on the invoice and get right, from your experience?
they'll put it on the invoice. It may not always be right. And I think there's no way of going back retrospectively and saying this is wrong. What you'll need to do is just double check it. And then next time you order, tell the guys in China that actually what you're sending me is not what the commodity code says. And you could save yourself some money because the commodity, the import duty percentage is differs depending on what type of product you've got, from 0% up to, I think, 12%, I think it is.
Okay, and that's on top of VAT, isn't it? Just to be clear,
that's before VAT.
Okay, that's before VAT. So just to be clear about VAT then, what exact number would you use to calculate VAT? Would it be the value of the goods only? Like if I've got 500 units that cost me $2 each, that's $1,000. Is that the value that the VAT is calculating on, 20% of that? Or is it that plus the freight? Or how does that work?
It's the commercial invoice value, plus freight, plus duty, and then VAT is on all of that.
Ah, that explains why I can never quite calculate VAT accurately on these things, because I didn't know that the import duty was included in that calculation. That's very worth knowing, actually. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to start importing big numbers, that's actually going to be quite a significant difference.
Yeah, it could be. It could mount up.
Yeah, very interesting indeed. Now, that's a good expert answer to something I definitely didn't know. And that's why I could never quite make the numbers match up to what I was getting charged. I always expect to get charged more than I calculate, because that's just seem how life seems to work. But that explains one of those mysteries, at least. Now, so is there anything else that you need to get on the commercial invoice? How, for example, do we communicate the fact that, for example, if I send something in, I've got my company, joeblogs.com, and I send it to FBA Prep UK, how do I communicate the fact to the customs guys, for example, or to DHL, that I am the company that's liable for the VAT, and then it needs to be in my company's name, but that is your address? Does that all need to be on the commercial invoice as well?
Yes, but in my experience, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Right.
It seems to be an onward, a daily battle with FedEx and DHL to get the person on the commercial invoice or the airway bill, or if it's coming by, well, yeah, just mainly by air, so it's the airway bill. It doesn't matter who the consignee is, I seem to get the invoice. So it usually gets sent to FBA Prep UK at my address. If you then look at the paperwork that comes with it, quite clearly it will say Joe Bloggs, care of FBA Prep UK, and our address. But they seem to ignore that. I think it's just a little bit of laziness. You know, there's an account set up, so at that postcode, so that must be for them, even though the airway bill. So it's an ongoing battle with them every day. So no, that doesn't, no matter what is put on the invoice, the commercial invoice or the airway bill, it doesn't determine where the invoice is going.
Interesting. Okay, so DHL or UPS won't sort it out, but presumably you can. So if I've got my name and my company name on it, you can give me a ring or get one of your staff to email me and say, hi Mike, we've got this thing, it's technically in our name, that this VAT invoice. So how do you handle that situation?
It'll depend on the customer. Some customers are fine and they just pay it. Others, and ironically, we can't sort it out with DHL. Because although we're the invoiced person, we want it swapping to the person on the airway bill who is actually responsible for those charges, then that person has to get in contact with them. So we can say, we can flag it up and say, there's a problem with this invoice, but I can't just say, DHL, you need to invoice Mike for these goods because they're his. You have right to then go to them and say, yes, I'm happy to accept that invoice. It just gets really complicated and puts a whole lot of time and effort in. But it's an ongoing, like I say, it's an ongoing battle. I think we are winning.
We were talking about freight. We knew the biggest errors. You've told us quite a few sort of freight scams that you want to be aware of. So we're talking about customs clearance, and really it sounds like the best way to avoid problems is to use a freight forwarder or your courier, and then just make damn sure that your name and the company name is on the paperwork somewhere, because that is something that you can deal with, even if the couriers are completely all over the shop with it.
Yeah, definitely. I think those guys are the professionals. They're doing it day in, day out. Mm. Yes, you can go and learn it, but it's time, and that time can be spent sourcing more profitable products, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, one of the biggest problems with this business is because you can start relatively small and you can learn most of the things you need to learn, instead of about 80% of what you need to know from a lot of podcasts, etc. But it's that last 20% in the detail of it that I think, particularly with customs clearance, you absolutely have to nail on the head. Otherwise, you can get things held up for weeks. And I've certainly had horror stories either from mentees that I've been coaching or just generally on all the Facebook groups. So just it's like war stories abound about freight and customs. So yeah, it's definitely one to outsource and just stay the hell away from if you can possibly avoid it.
Yeah, I think one thing I forgot to mention in the paperwork aspect is your EORI number.
Right, what's that then? Is that like something to do with Winnie the Pooh? Obviously not.
Yeah, no, but you'll probably be a donkey if you don't have one.
Yeah, nice, okay.
It's a number for the HMRC. You apply for it via HMRC. Ironically, you can't apply for one without a shipment, and you can't get a shipment into the UK or into Europe without one. So they only take about three or four days to get one. So as soon as your supplier gives you the away bill, it gives you all the details of where the shipment is coming, where it's going to land, what size it is, if it's coming by plane or whatever, the vessel number, all that sort of detail, which will be on the paperwork. You need that paperwork, that information to apply online. HMRC's website for your EORI number. Small scale stuff, so your samples, you'll probably be okay. Your couriers will probably take care of it. But once you start getting bigger shipments coming in, you definitely want to be getting your own EORI number. It's a one-time thing. They only use it for statistical measurements of what's coming in and what's going out of Europe. So it's no biggie, but it's something that you need to consider and take into consideration.
So just to be clear, an EORI number, that's a sort of importer number, an HMRC for anyone who's not familiar with it. If you're in the UK, sadly, we'll all be familiar with it, is the tax man.
He is.
Or Revenue and Customs, whatever. So Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, Her Majesty being the Queen, who technically kind of owns England or the UK, but that's a whole different story. If you're an American, don't get too confused. Just HMRC is the tax man, if you're wondering what the hell we're talking about. An EORI, do you know what that actually is? European something, importer something, something.
Off the top of my head, I can't remember what it says.
As long as we all know, understand, and what the hell these words mean. Because I know that I've got a poor American, Daniel, who's going to be listening to this. And I'm going to say, I'm just going to send him my usual cheerful email and say, hi, Daniel, can you make some coherent show notes out of this hours of ramble? And so I need to occasionally send me stuff back. He's very good, but occasionally send me stuff back. It's like, it'll say something like Eeyore, question mark. I don't get this bit, Mike, you know. So he's very conscientious, but yeah, just think of him. But you know, that's an example of outsourcing. I mean, like, you know, even with a podcast, I mean, it's nothing compared to products, but even so, you know, by the time you've messed about doing show notes and editing and stuff, I thought, you know what, I just need to outsource it. So by the way, if you're thinking of not outsourcing this, I'm just going to show you something now just to convince you of why you've got to outsource. This list here, if you can see it on the video, if you can't see it, I'm going to explain that it's I've handwritten a little list, and it's a 15 by 15 grid of stuff I had to do with products. So I had like some random product, I'd inspect it, check it's got a barcode, and they'd normally mess that up. Is the packaging okay? No, often it's a kind of flimsy plastic bag, exactly like Greg said. Have they done photos? Often they even got photos, or they got watermarks on it, so I've got to do that. You've got to list the damn thing on Amazon, you've got to do an inbound shipping plan, you've got to print an FNSKU label, you've got to put it on the product. And I even ran out of sticky labels. I was used to using a print stick, for God's sake. And then shipping label, you've got to print that off, stick it on, you know, check it. These are the reasons, guys, why A, do not do that thing where you order 15 different products from AliExpress and throw them out there, because it will drive you nuts. And B, why you must get onto Greg or somebody else who does your prep for you. End of sermon. But that's just that. That is like hell in a little box right there. That must be the sort of stuff you and your guys spend your life doing. So moving on from that traumatizing experience. is. Once again, so yeah, think about getting away from all my traumas, moving on to bigger picture stuff, more cheerful stuff. So for ambitious sellers, what are the big challenges when you're trying to scale up? So what, first of all, what about people who want to import a lot of one single product? What are the challenges? What are the solutions, assuming that they're going to use a prep company?
I think the challenges will be factoring timescales. Obviously, if they're coming by, if you bring in stuff by air now, 7 to 10 days, and that's from leaving China into yours or our hands. Obviously, as you scale up, you're going to be using sea. On average, it's 35 days from China to the UK. Then they've got to unpack or unload the boat. So you probably put another 5 days on top of that. So you're looking maybe 40 days from the time the Chinese say they've delivered it. So they'll deliver it, and then it's another 40 days. So that's something you've got to consider, because obviously if you've done your analysis to see when you're going to run out of stock, if you then put an extra 30 days on top of where you think you was, it's your rank is going to be nothing by the time it gets there. So that's one big thing. Obviously, if you have been used to, like we've touched on previously, if you have been used to doing your own prep, as you scale up, the deliveries are going to be getting bigger. They will be being delivered by on pallets rather than in loose boxes. So if you consider you're going to carry on doing it at home, you need to be starting to consider how you're going to offload the truck when it arrives. It's no longer a van or a 7.5 ton truck. It is quite often going to be an Arctic, so access becomes an issue. So there's all those kind of things that maybe some people don't consider. Others will, of course. Yeah. I think those are probably the biggest challenges. It's just remembering that things are going to get bigger, and it's not always as easy as you think to get them. You know, like I say, this morning I rolled into work this morning, and there's a 40-foot Arctic sat outside my warehouse with no tail lift on the back. So it's forklift or handball it off, you know, and there's 7 pallets, 135 boxes. You know, that's not going to, it's going to save going to the gym for sure.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is that please don't do this at home if you live in a one story, you know, a flat which is on the 16th story, who has 2 bedrooms or whatever. I mean, so it sounds like it's a very, very good point about the physical size of the vehicles. I think that's something actually to bear in mind. If you have got some kind of garage or warehouse space, that once you're looking at an Arctic, so an articulated lorry, it really is going to, you're not going to reverse those in a small space for starters. So it's a very, very good point. And also, it doesn't have a tail lift, which it sounds like it isn't standard, which is, again, one of those things that seems like a real detail until somebody physically turns up, and suddenly then it's a very physical problem. So thanks for flagging that one up. Now,
you have to request a tail lift.
Oh, right. So it's not a standardized thing at all. That's really
weird. No, usually you have to request it. And usually they charge you £40-45 extra for that facility. So, you know, I'm sure many people have been caught out with that.
Yeah, that's a very interesting little point, right? Thank you. But a little, which will suddenly become massive if you don't see it coming. Like many things in prep, right? And like anything in the supply chain as a whole. Now, tell me about those who want to go from, say, a few SKUs, 2, 3, 4 SKUs up to 10 or 20, but they don't have a huge quantity of each one. Now, that's something I'm considering as a strategy coming to the UK quite deliberately, because the sales volumes are quite a bit lower than the US. So in the US, I would quite often order, say, 500 units of one product, and that would sell through within a couple of months. And that was just going air courier, i.e. DHL. And, you know, if I want to scale that up, it's simple. I just get them to sea freight over 1,000 units, and that sells through in 3 to 4 months. But in the UK, because the sales volumes are lower, I've been considering getting my supplier, just one supplier might do, say, 5 different variations. So 5 different SKUs, technically, SKU being a shelf keeping unit. So basically different product. If you're new to Amazon, SKUs gets thrown around all the time. If you don't know what that is,
it does.
Nothing to do with any sort of meat skewers or anything. And so once you've got 5 or 10 SKUs coming over and they are sea freighted, have they got particular challenges about dealing with that compared to just one large amount of one SKU?
We see that quite a bit with things like drinks bottles. You know, you may have a blue one, a red one, a pink one. So it's exactly the same product, but Amazon will see that as 3 or 4 different SKUs because of the color changes. And if it's going straight into, you know, quite often we sometimes don't even touch the actual product. We'll receive and ship the boxes, so we'll just be a staging post to make sure that the duty is paid, certainly for overseas people. I think having the boxes clearly, the shipping cartons clearly printed, I think this is a thing the Chinese do anyway. And they'll quite often have your name, obviously made in China or whatever, and details of what's in the box and the number of boxes. It's quite a good idea to have that, because then if there is a problem with a particular colour or a particular SKU, if it's on the side of the box, we can identify it. And of course, if it's got quantities in there, if the box has been damaged, then we can have to count the box contents to make sure what's there. We've got that on the side of the box. But I think, you know, importing one, if it's from the same supplier, I think importing 500 of one thing and or 10-20s of 20 different products, the challenges are the same. It's exactly the same. I think where the challenges would come and the costs would rise is if you're importing products from different suppliers in China. I believe now there's a number of services where they'll consolidate product for you. So instead of having, I think they do it for samples too, but if you know, you could have four or five different suppliers send to one of these consolidation warehouses. They'll consolidate those shipments and export it as one shipment to you here in the UK or to us, saving you money on the end shipping. So I think yeah, multi suppliers. I think that's probably the way to go to save you money. You'll consolidate your shipping. But if you're sending from one, I don't think the challenge is. I think they're the same, because your supplier will organize everything at the one end.
Okay, so it sounds like the main thing is to be really super clear about labeling which product is which, especially if it's different variations of one product. But also, if you've got multiple boxes from different suppliers, as long as it's really clear what the product is that's inside the carton, I guess it's simple enough for you to ship it in and make sure it's working okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for that. So now we ought to draw things to a close and ought to let you go and have your dinner after a hard day moving people's boxes around. But so what do you see coming up in the prep side of Amazon? What are the future problems or problems that you see coming up more and more often that you think either Amazon's going to impose as a problem, or you see a problem in the freight chain with customs, or what are the problems you see in that sort of general freight chain side, including your prep side?
I think Amazon will start requesting detailed contents of boxes. They've already started. I mean, you can do it at the moment as an option. I actually think in the US, they've started to make it mandatory where you have to tell them what products are in what box and quantities, where over here, it's still a little bit, well, it's optional. You can choose not to. So I think that's, and obviously that's going to tighten up. As you know, you have to be even more clear with the suppliers in China, what they're putting in what box. And if you're sending directly, if you choose to send directly, I believe they even want packing notes now or I think that will be coming, packing notes in the boxes to, so when they open the box, they know what's there to speed up their end. I don't know what Brexit will do for freight coming from Europe and for us. That's probably a conversation for a whole different conversation for another time. I think it probably will have an impact if and when it happens. But Amazon have just released this week, there was footage all over Facebook of the Amazon Prime Air, their Boeing 777, I think, which is they're going to be shipping product around in a fleet. I think they're going to grow that fleet to 40 planes. I think it's internal in the US, not over here, but you never know. If they start it in the US, it will come here maybe 12, 18 months. It's not clear if they're going to be shipping private label products from China using those planes, but you know, they've got the money, so who knows what they're going to do. I'm not sure really if the freight aspect will change. It's been a fairly standard and settled process over the years. There's been no real major hiccups, to my knowledge, at least. And hopefully, what works now is. No, let's not change it going forward.
Yeah. So, okay. That's very interesting what you're saying. The freight itself is a pretty stable and sort of very tried and tested system. But the Amazon, as ever, Amazon's pushing to, you know, take over the world almost literally, it seems. So they are basically going to be trying to bypass usual freight channels and create their own channel, which is what they've basically done as distributors of retail goods. Is that apart from the website, which is what everyone sees, they are the biggest, quickest, most frighteningly efficient distribution channel probably known to man. And actually, it's very interesting to talk to some power sellers who say, well, yeah, I looked into about, you know, 10, 15 different solutions to distribution and came back to Amazon FBA as the best possible one for my Shopify store, which is, in other words, I'm not using Amazon's sales channel. in some cases, but they're using it as a distribution channel. So what you're saying is like the next logical step, which is they're going to bypass everybody, go straight to the Chinese, ship over crazy plane loads of stuff and bypass the entire world, you know, and the whole supply chain, possibly including us. So that's very, very interesting thing to keep a weather eye on. And especially if it's going to happen in the US first, we'll get a bit of advance warning if we are UK focused sellers, I guess, whether we live in the UK or live in the US, if our primary market is the UK. But if you're in the US already, folks, then it's already happening. I mean, that's certainly the first time I've heard about that. So very, very interesting thing to flag up. Thank you. Very thought provoking. So the last thing to ask is very simple. Like, how do people get hold of you? Obviously, you have great experience. You flagged up some really important details. And they say retail is detail, but there's nowhere is it more true than in prep and dealing with Amazon's incredibly fussy requirements, which, as you say, it may be a good thing, but it certainly makes life harder, and the whole freight process. So you've totally convinced me of your expertise, but how do we get hold of you and how do we use your services if we want to do that?
I have a Facebook group, quite active in the Facebook group. That's Amazon FBA UK. Post a message. Email greg@fbaprepuk.com. Or, of course, there's a contact us website on our website, which is fbaprepuk.com. And more often than not, it's me who comes back to you as initial contact anyway.
Fantastic. So, Greg, as I said, so many details, a lot of very practical wisdom and some really hilarious stories as well. I can't get over somebody ordering 3 pallets worth of stuff who lives in a high-rise flat. I mean, that just goes to say there's always one, right? So, Greg, it's been a pleasure and an informative as well. Do come back if you have new things to share, if you have new insights, and we always like to get our guests back on. But for now, I'll let you go have your dinner and say thank you very, very much, Greg Jones, for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs. No, but thanks very much for coming on. Amazing FPA.
Thanks, Mike. Speak to you soon.
Speak to you soon. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.